I will not forget the red Ford Tempo. My first 2 years of college were spent at the University of Southern California. It's located near downtown Los Angeles, and USC's main campus is wedged between the LA Coliseum to the south and the Shrine Auditorium to the north. Almost every major award ceremony for the entertainment industry, including the Grammys, the Oscars, and the Emmys, have been held at the Shrine Auditorium through the years. On a Sunday afternoon in my freshman year, I strolled across the parking lot behind my dorm with my camera in my hand to stand on the sidewalk across Jefferson Street to watch all of the movie and TV stars arrive for the Emmy Awards. As I stood there with several other USC students and other Angelenos watching the people arrive, cars carrying television and movie stars pulled around the corner. The parade consisted mostly of black stretch limousines, mixed in with the limos, several late model luxury cars also arrived, high-end BMWs and Mercedes. It was while I was standing there watching everyone from Richard Hatch, who had just won the first season of Survivor, to James Gandolfini from The Sopranos and Richard Schiff from The West Wing arrive, that I shot the photo that is in the last page of your bulletins. What had been a parade of expensive cars and stretch limousines was suddenly interrupted by the red Ford Tempo at the center of the photo. With its stock wheels and metal bumpers, the car looked to be only a year or two newer than the white Ford Tempo that I drove. It is only because of this car that I have any real memory of that day. And now I can't help but think of it and that sunny afternoon in Los Angeles, watching the attendees arrive for the Emmys, when I read our gospel text for this evening. At that time, the text says, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest of the king in the kingdom of heaven?" I don't think they asked out of genuine curiosity to know who it was or what the real qualifications for such a descriptor would be. No, I think they asked because they were interested purely in the state of being great. They probably also thought that it might be one of them. The real question was, who among us is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? I can't really blame them. It was pretty inevitable that this question would eventually come. They had pretty much been conditioned from an early age to seek greatness. The world they lived in was marked by winners and losers. Those who were great, the winners in the Roman Empire, were those with wealth and power and influence. They held power over thousands of people, this elite class and the others like them, sucking up much of the resources and subjecting others to slavery and economic injustice in order to keep what they had. Jesus even points to the ways that the kings of the earth dominate those under their rule with excessive taxes and tributes just before the disciples come to him with this question. If that's who the world says is great, then the disciples want to know, who among us is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Imagine that we are not far off from what the disciples were thinking when they approached Jesus with this question, which brings me back to that Sunday afternoon, standing on the sidewalk across from the Shrine Auditorium. I was there to see greatness. I wanted to see in person people I knew only on a screen, usually for someone playing someone other than themselves. Those who could afford to wear the greatest designer tux or gown, the ones that People magazine would rank as having the best outfit of the night. Those who could afford to show up in a car driven by somebody else well before Uber existed. not only were the people that I wanted to see able to afford these luxuries, they were the best in their industry, having been nominated for a major award for their work. I stood on that sidewalk all those years ago, hoping to see greatness. And then that little red Ford Tempo showed up. I imagine that my reaction to that car was a bit like what the disciples experienced when Jesus answered their question. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a child, whom he put among them, and said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." The disciples imagine greatness to be someone strong and powerful, someone with money and connections. But Jesus does not replicate what served as greatness in the Roman Empire. He does not turn to or evoke the image of a military conqueror or some sort of successful king or emperor. Instead, Jesus goes to the margins, placing a child in front of the disciples as a model for greatness. To be clear, this is not a child whose parents put a baby on board sticker on the back of their donkey or their chariot. Nor is it a child whose parents rearranged their calendars to ensure the kid was able to participate in a sport while also learning how to play the harp or maybe the lyre and then making it to Torah classes. Instead, this is a child who occupied an ambivalent social location, cared for and protected by their parents, but also valued only for their future economic contributions. Children in Jesus' time were powerless, vulnerable, and insignificant on their own. They were a threat to the adult males because they were unpredictable. Okay, maybe we can understand that one because children are still a little unpredictable. This child that Jesus places in front of the disciples is not the child around whom their parents' lives revolved. And it is this child that Jesus points to as a model for greatness, or really any child at the time. Jesus goes to the margins of the world and drags them into the center. And in doing so, Jesus tells the disciples that to be great, they must turn. They must go a different direction and change their ways. They must give up their cultural commitments to domination, superiority, and advantage. And in their place, they must take up new commitments to learning and growing, as well as to being vulnerable and insignificant, to being powerless and maybe a little unpredictable, or maybe at least to be aware that this is what they have been all along. Maybe Jesus' invitation to the disciples isn't to become like children, but to give up pretending to be something that they aren't, something that we also must learn. Because when we're really honest, when we stop pretending like we know what we're doing or that we have it all together, when we're honest about the significant pain that we have experienced or aware how quickly our lives can be altered by a single event, we realize just how vulnerable and insignificant we really are, how powerless we are to prevent tragedy and pain in our lives. We already are like children. This is part of what it means to be human. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says. Part of being humble like a child is knowing and trusting that there is a parent to love and care for you. A parent who will ensure our needs are taken care of, who will console us when we cry and push us when we refuse to try something new. A parent who will be there when we are most in need, even when we feel like we're alone. Tonight we come to begin the 40 days of Lent, for some of us again, to turn as Jesus commands the disciples first and then us to change our ways, shedding our commitment to those things that we have wed ourselves to that prevent us from recognizing who we are, beloved children of God. We come tonight to recognize our vulnerability and our insignificance, to remember that we are dust, and to dust we will return, but also to remember that God breathes life into dust. And that is true for all of us. To be great is to be who you already are, a child of God. Even if it means arriving at a fancy award show in your old, faded red Ford Tempo.